And Pat Benatar brings us back in with We Belong. And that's all any of us really want, right? It's to belong. And you belong right here on Coast to Coast AM. You're among friends. Welcome. We are also throwing out a hashtag here for you at the hashtag RichardC2CAM if you want to join the conversation via Twitter. RichardC2CAM, as in Coast to Coast AM. And got an interesting a tweet here from Teresa. It's at Rockstar Mom, at Rockstar Mom. And she writes, the Kaaba stone in Mecca should be bursting with intention because Muslims worldwide direct their prayer to it. That's true. And then we've got at BoobyCat2006, at BoobyCat2006 tweets, have you seen the new big crater on Mars? Ouch. Well, in fact, I have seen it, thanks to our webmaster, Sean Lattiser, who has posted this story on the slide carousel. It's in it's called The Red Planet's Newest Scar at Coast to Coast AM. You can check it out. A spectacular new image from NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter shows the scar of an enormous impact crater on the Red Planet's Elysium Planitia volcanic region. Astronomers estimate it was formed between February 2012 and June 2014. In the image, a distinct crater rim can be clearly seen with ejecta that is much darker than the surrounding dust-covered terrain. So again, that's the Red Planet's Newest Scar. You can read all about it and see the pictures at coasttocoastam.com. Just a reminder, coming up in the next hour, open lines. But first, we'll get back to our conversation with Tara McIsaac, the Beyond Science reporter at the Epoch Times, as we delve into the science of coincidence right here, Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Tara, there are a number of different types of coincidences. I guess Dr. Biteman has sort of categorized them. Let's talk about some of the different types of coincidences.
Yeah, sure. Well, so he feels that the taxonomy, you know, defining these different types is really important to establishing a serious science of coincidences. So some of the different kinds are synchronicity, and I know, you know, many of the listeners have heard this word before. I'll just say, you know, it literally means moving together in time. And Dr. Biteman explained it as the type of coincidence where you encounter something that's mirrored in the external world from something you're thinking, and you're surprised by it. So, for example, for the first time in 20 years, you're thinking of your fourth grade teacher, and later that day, you run into her at the supermarket. So that's synchronicity, as he defines it.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened to a lot of us. A lot of us can relate to that one. And when it happens, wow. I mean, it's just, it's like a kick in the pants.
Yeah. Yeah, and another type is serendipity. So it's essentially finding what you need just when you need it. And this kind of relates to what we were talking about with the science experiments. It's like you find something through a coincidence, and it's exactly what you needed. And actually, Dr. Biteman has this theory that we sort of have this mental GPS, and he's not sure exactly how it works. He hopes that we'll continue to investigate this, but it could almost be like, he says that it could be like, you have an extra sense. You can pick up on some sort of electricity field or something. He feels like he calls it the psychosphere. There's all of these ideas and everything out there, and you can sort of, without consciously knowing about it, sort of find them. And that's how it sort of works with these coincidences. Some part of you can just sense where you need to go and where you need to be to run into this coincidence, and they can be really useful.
What's seriality, Tara?
Seriality is sort of like I was saying before, where all of these things stack up. It's a series that could theoretically be verified by anyone. So unlike some of the other ones where it's about how you're feeling or your mental state or something, this is, you know, it's you both have the same birthday, you both study at the same school, so on and so forth. So that's kind of a string of similar events. And then there's simulpacity, which is feeling another's distress at a distance, which is actually what spurred Dr. Biteman to start studying coincidences, because he had a personal experience where this will illustrate what simulpacity is. he was a couple thousand miles away from his father, who was dying. His father had been sick for a while. And Dr. Biteman, inexplicably, through no external circumstances, felt himself to be choking. He wasn't eating or anything. You know, he felt himself choking. And he later found out that his father, thousands of miles away, was on his deathbed choking at that exact same time. So this was sort of feeling somebody's distress at a distance. That's a different type of coincidence that he marks.
That's very common with identical twins.
Yes, yes, exactly. And especially identical and extroverted twins, apparently. And, you know, parents, you know, you'd say, what is it, mother's intuition, that kind of thing. Parents and people who are close with each other. It seems that there's sort of an emotional... It's an emotional bond. That's what it seems. It's usually when people are really close, they feel this empathy for each other from a distance.
And Dr. Biteman had another experience, another personal coincidence that sort of inspired him, and that involved his dog when he was a child. Tell me about that.
Yeah, his dog was missing for several hours, and he rode his bike to a police station to ask if anybody had found the dog. They didn't see it. He started to cry. He was really distressed, and not really thinking, he took a wrong turn on his way home. And sure enough, as soon as he took the wrong turn in this random direction, his dog started running towards him as though the dog expected to meet him there. And, you know, it just kind of, these are one of the events in his life that made him think, well, you know, somehow I GPS'd my way to my dog without knowing it. I went the wrong way, which is kind of silly because, you know, he knew the town well and he should have just rode his bike back to his house. Or it was only because he was distressed and he happened to go that way that he found his dog.
Have you had a personal experience with a coincidence that sort of defied, I mean, you know, you couldn't explain it away with mere probability?
I would love to tell you about a coincidence that is related to me that somebody just told me the other day, and it's actually related to Coast to Coast as well.
Ah,
because,
great.
Because when I was on here talking about EVP, the electronic voice phenomenon, a.k.a. phone calls from the dead,
yes.
Somebody heard me and contacted me, and I interviewed him the other night. He was really involved in the investigations back in the 60s, and he had some really interesting experiences himself. So anyways, leading up to our interview, he was thinking to himself, okay, well, I don't really know what happened to me back then. He was feeling kind of skeptical, and he thought he would kind of test the universe, so to speak. And he said, okay, I need some proof. You know, I want something strange to happen today, physically, that has to do with somebody who's died who I know. And he thought of his father. And I'll try to keep it short, but basically he got a phone call shortly thereafter from a lady saying, I have a package for you. It's a really small town that he lives in Texas, so kind of everybody knows everybody a little bit. And he said, okay, is it for Rick Dodson, which is his name? And she said, no, it's for Charles Dodson. And Charles is his father. And, you know, basically... this package arrived, and it actually wasn't for him. It was from another Charles Dodson in town who has a P.O. box there, and he thought it was really weird because he's never met this other Charles Dodson. And so that was one coincidence. So he thought, okay, that's kind of weird, but I need to test this again. I need to verify.
Right, right.
So the next day, he thought, I need another coincidence, and he thought of me because he was going to have the interview with me. He's like, I want to have a coincidence related to Tara. And he thought to himself, Tara's kind of a strange name. I don't really know anybody named Tara. I don't remember meeting anybody. So as soon as he had this thought, he got online, he checked his email, and he checked his Facebook, and he had one notification, and it was from a woman named Tara who wanted to join a group that he moderates there, a neighborhood group. So he got the coincidence. He thought it was kind of weird, but it gets weirder. He told his wife about that when she got home, and she said, I knew somebody named Tara was going to ask to join that group because I was just having coffee with a friend, and I overheard a woman saying she wanted to join that group, and I started to talk to her and found out her name was Tara. So he was asking the universe for these coincidences, and they all seemed to stack up almost as he asked for them.
You know, I think these things happen to all of us more than we're aware of because we're simply not aware. If we started paying attention, we'd start to see these coincidences stacking up in all of our lives, don't you think?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's one reason Dr. Biteman wants to study this more, because some of them can be really useful as well, not just in terms of, wow, this is really a amazing. Maybe there's something more to life. It can be useful in that way, but it's also just useful in terms of, he gives examples of somebody he talked to who sort of found a job that way. You know, you can find sort of practical things that you need, scientific discoveries, you know, if we tap into the power of coincidences.
All right, well, let's tap into the power of our callers here on Coast to Coast AM, because I'm anticipating some pretty remarkable stories involving coincidences. Let's begin east of the Rockies, and Tony's in Kansas City. Hey, Tony, welcome. How are you? Is Tony there? All right, let's try the international line. David is in Montreal. Good morning, David. How are you?
Hey, I'm okay, hanging in there. I'm a little tired there. It's pretty late over here. How you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, congratulations on the show. I've been listening for a little bit, maybe 2 years or something. You guys mess up my next day there. You guys keep me up there. Your show finishes at 5 a.m. over here.
Yes, it does. It can be a bit of a sleep disruptor, but thanks for joining us, David. Did you have a coincidence you wanted to share with Tara?
Yes, Tara. So, hi, Tara. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Pretty good. Feeling good. I'm in a good place right now. I listened to what you guys are talking about. I could probably talk to you guys for a long time. Quick, fast. I had a joke. Maybe George is projecting his intentions in the machine with your doctor there.
All right. And did you have a coincidence that's happened to you that you wanted to share with us, David?
Oh, there's lots of coincidences. I had questions for Tara, though. But, since we're all one and we're all connected, you know what I mean? And so it's natural that we, all these, like she said, synchronicities happen and stuff, and when you're aware, you notice them more. I've had sometimes dreams that, you know, occurred, like predict the future, like they would occur, like I'd dream of something and then it would happen. I have a friend who told me about an experience where she astral projected. I hear a lot of special supernatural kind of things, which are hard to believe, but then when you study and you research and you hear more and more testimonials and you start to say, hey, so, you know, stuff is real. And I believe that all humans have that power inside them. And this, you know, poison and junk food and television keeps you from being confident, keeps you from being who you are. You're reaching your fullest capabilities. Now, I won't talk too much. I'll just ask the question to go back about this machine, Tara, of your doctor there?
Mm-hmm.
My question is how? You say that it traps the intent of humans into the machine. How? How does it hold that intent? How does that work?
Well, as I think Tara explained, nobody seems to know how it works, including Dr. Tiller. Isn't that right, Tara?
Yeah, that's the mystery of it. He knows it does work. He doesn't know exactly how it works. He just knows it does. And hopefully one day we'll figure out how.
All right. Let's go to the wild card line and say hi to Jeff, who's in Culver City, California. Good morning, Jeff. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hello, Richard and Mrs. Tara McIsaac, and Happy New Year to you guys.
Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, the power of intention is one of the most profound powers that human beings possess. You know, to intend to do something, whether for good or bad, creative or destructive, is truly remarkable, you know, and this leads me to ask, you know, this about this latest intentions by these individuals who killed so many people in France. Now, they intentionally meant to commit these acts. The combination of energetic forces, both mental and physical, merged together to have them behave the way they did. These invisible forces would start inside the mind and brain and eventually find multiple places in the body, the eyes, the vocal cords, the arms, the hands, the legs, all of which are needed to conduct such behavior is truly horrifying. My question is this, Ms. McIsaac, is there any way scientific or are there any scientific methods that can somehow capture these invisible forces, say on special photographic film or in high-resolution microscopes to be studied and eliminated before they manifest into the physical body and which could cause all kind of grief and injury and heartache to people? And I'll take your answer off the air.
That's a great question, Jeff. So I guess he's talking about with the power of intention and how it may manipulate these subtle energies. Is it possible to record that or capture that in some way on film or some sort of a recording device?
There have been some investigations, and I did talk to Dr. Tiller about that. I have to review my notes to remember. He did something with the photographic plates, and it was... I really don't know enough about it to talk about it, but I can't remember clearly that it was something like you're saying, where there's you can capture this intention as it's sort of entering somebody or being manifest in these kinds of acts. I guess, you know, all I can say without reviewing exactly that experiment is that hopefully that's what this intention study will find out. Maybe we can figure out how to prevent some of the negative intentions from having an effect. I'm not sure.
Well, that brings up an excellent a point regarding negative or ill will, if you will. Did Dr. Tiller experiment at all with capturing ill will, or is it all sort of positive intention?
He's only experimented with positive intention or sort of neutral intention, such as changing the pH level of water.
All right, let's say hi to first-time caller Paul, who is in Ocala, Florida. Paul, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, how are you guys?
Very well, thank you. Your question, comment for Tara McIsaac.
Sure, I guess I'm going to play devil's advocate here, although I am very interested in the fantastical, for sure. What I think, in my opinion, what she's kind of playing on is something I took a class on, which was the collective consciousness theory, which kind of states that, kind of thoughts become things, meaning human intention. If thought about, with a certain intensity, kind of has the ability to manipulate one's reality. I'll say I personally don't believe in that, not only from personal experience, from, experience with friends and family.
Yet, Paul, we have these studies scientifically conducted.
I understand the theory, and I still believe it is a theory, meaning it cannot be tested.
But according to Dr. Tiller, not only has it been tested, it's been repeated. And if something is repeatable, and tested. I mean, that's the scientific method.
Yes.
I don't
know
how we can quibble with that. Yeah.
You are correct. My point is that may work for some, but it does not work for all. Meaning, according to that theory, if someone thinks long and hard enough about something, if someone intends something to happen for so long and thinks hardly, thinks hard enough on it, that may actually happen. And I think, reality kind of dictates differently. I think, to assume that something like that, like thoughts become things, that we are all part of kind of the same, energy, and we kind of manipulate that energy on a universal level, globally, and that our intentions become, almost alter our reality. Kind of sounds nice on paper, and I understand that you're saying that he might have tested it, but I guarantee he hasn't tested it on a it's not a global level. Meaning it.
No, I hear you. I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I mean that's the next step, I guess. Listen, Tara, stay where you are. We'll get back to our discussion on the power of intention and the science of coincidence, and take some more calls as well here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't go away. Welcome back. And up here in Toronto, frigid Toronto, I host a radio program, a weekly radio program called The Conspiracy Show, heard throughout southern Ontario and well down into the United States. We've got about 30 U.S. affiliates and growing. Tonight here on Coast, hashtag Richard. C2CAM, hashtag Richard C2CAM. Join the conversation And I've got, let's see here, UFOcontact.com, wondering about how intention shows on an MRI, right versus left brain. Great question. We'll put that to Tara when we come back. And we'll get into that conversation, the power of intention, as well as the science of coincidence and your calls. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. Tara McIsaac stays with us till the top of the hour. After that, open lines. Tara, we had, I've had a number of encounters with a pretty well-known skeptic by the name of Michael Shermer. Nice fella, but he's one tough nut. I mean, there's not a whole lot that Michael Shermer seems to believe in terms of, you know, the unexplained and so forth. But he sort of became a bit of a believer, not so skeptical about the coincidences after something peculiar happened in his life. Can you share Michael Shermer's experience?
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you brought that up. It was, I actually haven't reviewed it recently, but he had a coincidence in his life that actually made him question, like you said, he's an avid skeptic, and it made him question that if there's something more. And it had to do with his wife and their wedding. They were getting married, and basically she had wanted, I believe it was her father who had died, I'd have to review it again, but she was wondering, you know, if she, sort of his, oh, her grandfather who had died when she was 16, she was thinking about him as they were getting married on this special day. And, you know, fast forward to after the wedding, there's a drawer in the couple's bedroom, and they had this radio that had been silent for decades, and they couldn't get it working again. And after the ceremony, they went to talk alone, and she was feeling lonely because she was missing her family back in Germany. She's from Germany, and she was wishing her grandfather could have been alive to give her away. So they went back to the house, and they heard a love song playing, and they searched for the source of the music. And then they realized that it was the transistor radio in the drawer, this radio that hadn't worked. And they actually found out from other people that they had heard that transistor radio playing earlier as the ceremony was going on, and the transistor radio worked entirely throughout the wedding night, playing really nice music, you know, fitting for a romantic evening. And then after that, it's the next day it stopped working, and it never started working again.
And that turned Michael Shermer into a believer of sorts.
Yeah, he said he said we should not shut the doors of perception when they may be open to us to marvel in the mysterious.
Wow. That's quite an admission from, as I say, a pretty tough nut with Michael Shermer. Just goes to show you, I mean, the power of coincidences can transform lives. Let's go east of the Rockies, and Andy is in Springfield, Missouri. Good morning, Andy. Welcome to Coast. How are you?
Hi, Richard. How are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Good evening, Tara.
Good evening.
The interesting conversation you had, and I just had a little bit of different take on it, and where you can, I think a happening that negative collective intentions recently happened that I wanted to bring up that you'll probably recognize when I tell you about it. But as far as intentions, I don't know about your Dr. Tiller's machine, but I suspect it probably operates some way on the lines of a Ouija board. And but anyway, human intention, as far as what I understand it to be, is mainly an act of the human will, such as in your willpower. If you will something, like if you don't have enough willpower to not eat or to eat too much or not to eat enough, you're going to gain weight or lose weight. That's your willpower. So you can collectively bring about negative impacts with willpower, and your human will mainly will operate in that sphere mainly along the lines of hate or love. And a recent incident where collective intentions negatively impacted. And it brought about a negative impact was in the recent demonstrations in New York, where the demonstrators marched through the streets for nights shouting, "What do you want? Dead cops? When do you want? Dead cops? Now. When do you want? Dead cops?" They kept shouting that over and over again. And that, I believe, is a good example of collective negative intentions that brought about a negative impact on those two police officers in New York.
All right, Andy, thank you for that. Tara, what do you make of that? I mean, the power of negative intention.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could work on a variety of levels, since that's very external as well. Even just that environment could, you know, sort of hype up this sentiment and make it happen in a way. But you're right, it's possible, quite possible, that on another level, just so many people thinking that or even saying it over and over again. I mean, who knows what kind of effects it's having in this other realm, this other type of substance that Dr. Tiller's discovered.
So if power or positive intention, if positive intention could be looked at as a prayer, negative or ill will intentions could be looked at as perhaps something like a hex or a curse that we often associate with, you know, a run of bad luck.
Yeah, I mean, there's the evil eye that's talked of in a lot of cultures, and that could relate as well.
Let's say hello to Ernest, who's west of the Rockies from Seattle. Ernest, welcome to Coast. Good morning.
Hey, Happy New Year, Richard and Tara.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Okay, first I want to, if you could help me out real quick. I'm kind of confused with the definition of the power of coincidence. I think coincidence to me is just random. I don't think anything's random, but let me just tell you real quick, Richard and Tara. I had a story that I was out there in Seattle, and I was working in my friend's yard. I was doing some work for her, and it was a hot, hot day, and I was just tired. I was miserable. I didn't want to be there. And so all of a sudden I saw the Life Flight helicopter leave. It was coming from the west, heading north. And something told me, pray for that person, pray for that, pray, pray. And I said, I'm thinking I'm talking to myself and I'm just miserable. So I said, no. It's fine. It kept nagging at me. So I prayed for that person. Well, it turned out to be my cousin's newborn baby daughter who was in that, who they were going up there to get her and collect her because she had some rare something happened to her. But anyway, so I don't think anything's random. And for the last caller, what I think he's trying to say is that the power is in your tongue. There's life and death in your tongue. Yeah, that's right. The old Christian talk. There you go again. But no, it's just, it doesn't really matter. The principle is that when you talk negative, you bring negative things. There are, I think we're being oppressed as far as our car. Would you agree that I don't think we're made to go to work, come home, go to sleep, you know, let the old lady nag at you every day, and then we die. I think there's more to it than that, and I think we're just, we don't have the knowledge yet, but I'll take my your comments off there. And Richard, I wish you'd work here on the weekends for sure, man, especially Sunday. You guys have a Happy New Year.
I appreciate it, Ernest. Thank you for that. Well, any comment further to Ernest's remarks, Tara?
Yeah, I guess the more we explore all of these phenomena related to human consciousness, I mean, we contemplate why we're here and what we're doing, and it could, I don't know, I can't say what role that sort of, you know, daily grind that he described has in all of that. Certainly, I mean, we have to keep things running, we have to go to work and make money and that kind of thing, but, you know, humans are pretty special, I think, and I mean, there's more to us than that, for sure. And how we even view that daily grind could really have a big impact. You know, if you view it positively or negatively, it can affect your happiness, for one. It can affect the people around you, I think. It works on a lot of different levels.
To the wild card line we go once again. Taylor is in Sarasota, Florida. Good morning, Taylor.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the word weird coming up in conversation.
The word weird?
The word weird.
Okay.
Everybody ends up describing synchronistic events as being weird. This weird thing happened to me. And I threw a very parallel, I ended up being involved in a relationship that was synchronistic and parallel in and of itself, and learning about the runic alphabet about the elder Futhark and about this one particular rune that exists, and it is called the Web of Weird, spelled W-Y-R-D. And this is the origin of our word weird. And every letter in the runic alphabet is represented in this one symbol, and it basically means that all cannot exist without one, and one cannot exist without all. It's a binding rune. It means that everything is synchronistic. Everything that is weird happens for a reason. And so it just, it kind of was weird to me that the word weird keeps coming up in conversation about synchronicity, because it all plays in together.
Excellent point, Taylor. Appreciate that. I had no idea that that's where that was the origin of the word weird.
That's really fascinating. Actually, it's funny when you mentioned that. When I first started writing, working for Beyond Science, a colleague said to me something like, "Oh, I see all that weird stuff you've been writing lately." And it was a compliment from him that he was found it really interesting. But I took a little bit of offense to it at the beginning because I felt like he didn't take it seriously. Like there's a negative connotation with weird, but actually, I learned to embrace it. It's just weird and wonderful. It's kind of it's just interesting. It's unusual, and it's interesting to know the origin of that word. Like you said, a bonding room. That's really interesting.
Taylor, I appreciate the call. On a personal note, Tara, let me ask you: after writing about the sorts of things that you cover for the Epoch Times, could you ever go back to covering what I call sort of the workaday reality? Let's say, for example, you were put on the police beat, or you had to write about, geopolitics or domestic politics. After sort of exploring the things that you do, could you ever go back to writing about so-called normal stuff?
I really, really enjoy what I study and what I write. I think I could. I think that I just would look for that mystery and that fascination in all of the daily things. You know, I used to cover local New York news. I did do that kind of work before. And there are fascinating facets of every issue. I mean, it certainly would probably be a bit mundane in comparison, but I think I try to make things interesting and find that weirdness, if you will.
I tried to to do again, I'll use the word normal. It's not the appropriate word, but it's kind of shorthand. I tried to go back and do a normal type talk show and talk about the workaday reality, garbage strikes, and provincial budgets and so forth. And I got to tell you, my heart was just not in it, and I just gravitated back to the things that we talk about here on Coast to Coast. And I don't think I could ever go back to talking about those things. After, I guess, your eyes have been opened to a certain extent, It changes you forever, and there's no going home.
Yeah, I think it would be definitely relatively boring to go back to writing about, like you said, garbage strikes and that kind of thing. Although I could try to make the best of it. I mean, delving into this other subject matter is changing. You know, it's life changing.
Well, ultimately, I think this stuff is really what matters. It's not the workaday reality. It's not the superficial stuff. I mean, it is important, but I think the big questions, the things that you're delving into, the things that gets discussed on this program, ultimately, which point to who we are, where we came from, what happens after we die, those ultimately are the important questions.
And I think they have more universal appeal, too. I mean, you could write about a garbage strike, but that only affects people in that city. When you write about something that has to do with who we are fundamentally and investigating these philosophical and scientific questions, every single human being is interested in some level, even if they're skeptics and they're interested because they want to deny it. You know, they're still interested in who they are and asking these questions from whatever side you take.
Agreed. Wildcard line, Bill is in West Hartford, Connecticut. Good morning, Bill. Welcome.
Yes, hi, Tara. Let me get right to it. I am an atheist myself and a skeptic, but I have a very open mind. Let me get right to my point. It involves intention and the most number of people, the most number of humans of any of any horrible event involves the space program. I'm talking about one particular mission, Apollo 13, in April of 1970. My point is, during that particular mission, everybody knows about it, where there was an explosion of that Apollo spacecraft that was going out to land on the moon, and there were four full days where over 2 billion Earthlings, 2 billion people knew about the desperate straits those three astronauts were in, and the spacecraft looped around the moon and came back to the Earth. Now, you compare that to the two shuttle missions, Challenger in 1986, as well as Columbia in 2003. The Challenger explosion in 1986, no one knew in advance what would have happened, except for a couple of engineers at Morton Thiokol had qualms about that launch in the cold weather. And Columbia in 2003, no one knew when it disintegrated landing. And the two Russian missions, no one knows about, very few. Soyuz 1, the parachute didn't work, and it crashed to the Earth in April 1967, but no one in the Russian public was informed till after the mission was over. And Soyuz 10, where the cabin depressurized and they land on Earth successfully, all three astronauts died.
No
one knew about
yes.
it, though. But I'm saying in Apollo 13, everybody on the planet knew during those 4 days. Could that be intention? I'm open to it.
I'm glad to hear you're open to it. Tara, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I definitely think that that can have an effect. And I guess it comes back to the question of, you know, we do have powerful intention, and it's figuring out that difference between those times that we directed at something and we don't get what we want, and the times we direct it and we do get what we want. I don't know if it depends on the situation, the different people doing this, what kind of state they're in, how clear their thoughts are on it. But I think that, yeah, these global, these big news events where everybody's paying attention and having certain thoughts about it, it's certainly possible that that can have an effect.
Are you planning a follow-up? Are you going to return to Stanford and visit with Dr. Tiller and perhaps catch a glimpse of this intention device?
Most certainly I'm going to continue to follow up with Dr. Tiller, and I hope to catch a glimpse of the intention host device. And I'm going to definitely keep following up on his intention studies and keep in touch with him. And I've been corresponding with his colleague, Dr. Misha Manik, as well. So I definitely, you know, stay tuned. I'll keep researching and finding out what I can.
And do you ever think, when it comes to studying, you know, these incredible mysteries like coincidences and so forth, that sometimes a mystery is better left a mystery if we unravel these mysteries? I don't know. To me, it's almost like we lose a little bit of that magic. We lose a little bit of ourselves if we solve all these you know, unexplained mysteries. I don't know. Part of me wishes they would just be kept a mystery. What do you think?
I have a feeling that who knows the depth of mystery of being. As I delve into these mysteries, although they start to be solved to a certain extent, they always open new mysteries, and it becomes even more fascinating. And yeah, maybe it's a situation where there will always be some mystery. I mean, I agree that I don't think it would be... I don't think the world would be the same without mystery.
No, and we'll never run out. That's for sure. Tara, appreciate your time. Tara McIsaac, thank you. Here are the Beatles, Real Love, taking us into the break. Open lines next on Coast to Coast. My name is Richard Serrett. Stay with us.